human to the humanoid.
They are. Mm-hmm. And I can only compare Douglas and Northrop, and North American and Northrop, because those two, North American and Douglas, were union. Mm-hmm. Well, we women were treated like ladies, as I said, and we were protected. We were not required to lift and do heavy things. If we needed assistance, we would call any man around. He would jump and help us do what was too heavy for us. Mm-hmm. We had senior citizens, 60 or so retired women, in our restrooms at all times. We had like a living room, mm-hmm, and our toilet facilities separate. And we were allowed 20 minutes twice a day in the restroom and 20 minutes twice a day in the hospital before we were required to go home on sick, and that we would not be docked. Mm-hmm. The matrons were there in case we spotted our pants or had a marital problem or whatever. They were our mothers to talk to, mm-hmm, and for our protection. Mm-hmm. Well, in North American and Douglas, they had... Well, we had couches and easy chairs and a refrigerator where we could go in and eat or whatever. Mm-hmm. And North American and Douglas, the union shops, they had wooden benches, one in each washroom area, no living room areas. And the girls that came in after the war told us this, that all during the war they had that, and they made the same money we made. If the seat of their pants touched that seat, they were reported to the union and penalized. Mm. They were not treated well. Women have different problems than men with their menstruation and cramps and what have you. Mm-hmm. They have different problems, and they have to be treated different, whether they want to be or not. But that's the difference in that we were not required to strike. Or we were not penalized if we were off sick, mm-hmm, and we were not checked up on if we were... In other words, we were treated with great respect, mm-hmm, almost like it was an honor that we were honoring the company with our work. Mm-hmm. And we felt, in return, the same way. Northrop was like a big family. Mm-hmm. There was 125 people in the jig shop. We had a house party. And if one person had a problem, we all rallied around. And until this day, Northrop is that way. If someone needs a blood transfusion, there is more people from all over the plant that will go in and donate and give them assistance than whether they know them or not. They're a Northrop employee. And you can't have that in the union shop. I don't know why, but it just doesn't happen.
Anyone ever tried to organize a union?
Oh, heavens, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Many, many times. Mm-hmm. And the one time they almost made it after the war, Mr. Northrop kiboshed it there. Mm-hmm. He went to each shift at lunchtime, mm-hmm, and told them that this was their company. Mm-hmm. If they were dissatisfied with it or thought the union could do any better, whatever you do, go wholehearted. If a union is what you want, let's welcome them with open arms. Well, they voted it down 90% because they weren't dissatisfied. It was a union push. Mm-hmm. And union employees that come into Northrop, I know they tried to block my vote. I'm getting way ahead of myself. But I was still allowed to vote after I went in the office because I was still classified as a machinist. And they tried to block my vote because I was now in the office, because they knew I was anti-union. Mm-hmm. A union employee in Northrop works about 2 hours for the company halfway, and they work about 4 hours full bore for the union, trying to get the people to join the union. And then the other couple hours just sloughing off. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it were a union shop, they would not be allowed that. Mm-hmm. We got the first coffee breaks 10 minutes twice a day for coffee breaks. And
before the other
And we got 2 weeks, let's see, they get, in 1952 when I left, they got seven paid holidays and 3 weeks vacation, plus from the day before Christmas Eve until the day after New Year's with pay. Union shops are never that much.
So, to backtrack, I remember that I'd asked you about your first day there.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about you walked in and you met Pappy Dills.
And Pappy Dills.
Now, was he the person that you immediately sort of...
He was my foreman. Yes.
And now, at Norfolk, did you have, like, workers and then the foreman and then was that...
Lead man. It was, the foreman was over the whole department. And there was a lead man over the area. There were seven of machines for us girls to run. There was a lead man. I can't remember his name. He was a very dissatisfactory gentleman. He was henpecked at home, and he tried to browbeat us. And he made the mistake of picking on Tony, our little Czechoslovakian girl that was so patriotic. And he just nagged on her just once too often, and I happened to be absent the day they got him fired. They bodily took him up. Well, the office was on a poop deck, which is a half level of overlooking the department. And they bodily took him up and insist he be fired on the spot, and he was. And then we got Monty, who was a young fireball. And they worked, well, it was a pleasant change. They have a few women in the department, and they never resented us, the fellows on the building the jigs in the department. They were all extremely cordial and helpful and nice to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you had, you say on this, I should back up a little bit, maybe you were in school, were you ever nervous about working with this machinery?
Oh, yes, scared to death. To be perfectly honest, yes. And I was very insecure and was on my own and was frightened, for the big city scared me to death. And I just would not give up and go home and say, you know, I failed. Because there was nothing in Texas for me. And I knew I had to make it here. And knowing you can make it, and doing it is two different stories. And it took me, I guess, about 6 months before I quit going home and crying most of the night for fear, you know, and then getting up and going to work the next day. But you ease your way in, and genuinely friendliness. There was not the propositions, not the date asking. It was just, can I help you? And once you cushion yourself in, then the jokes start, the pranks and the funnies and the kid games. And I had never learned to play. And the group would, well, bowling alleys is about all we had in those days. And with the gas rationing, you would all pile in whoever had the gas to get you to the bowling alley. And they taught me to drink hard liquor and to play cards and shoot craps and to bowl and to just play. And it was in a more like a family with brothers and sisters. There wasn't, some would go with dates and some would go single. But some married fellows would go without their wives, and some the wives would come, and some of the wives we never met. But it was just, it's hard to describe unless you've been alone and welcomed into a big Italian family. Now, that's the best description I can give you. They were like a big Italian family. And if a fellow from another part of the plant would come in and start whistling at we girls are propositioning or something. The whole department was up in arms. They were going to clean up on them. They were protecting their ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice feeling, a secure feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I know later on, after I got in the office, I wore a red and white striped, like an awning striped sweater, T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow of European descent, I don't know what nationality, but he just kept insisting on whistling at me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the superintendent of the plant was just hostile at my foreman because he didn't fire the man. Well, he was just being friendly. I didn't take it in an insulting way. I just asked him to stop, you know, that I wasn't advertising, that I just loved red. But I think it all evolved after that, you know, of the... In October of 45, they took we women all off of machines
mm-hmm.
at night. And I don't know, it was the end of government leniency for us to work on machines. Because when a woman is injured on a machine, I know one of the homeless women I ever knew in my life cut the tip end off about that much.
Mm-hmm. Just to tip in
on a punch press. And she got just a fabulous amount of money because it marked her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it worked in those days.
Mm-hmm.
None of we girls ever, in fact, I don't remember if any girl in Northrop ever being injured in any form. I think that girl with the finger was about the only one that ever was damaged in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was lots of safeguards.
Mm. Now, when you had first gone in there, though, before the taking you off the machines,
mm-hmm.
there was only yourself and Florence, if her name was, mm-hmm. the only other woman who was working in the machine?
No.
I mean, in the jig shop?
No, there were seven of us girls.
So were the seven of you all went in at once?
No, they came in at different times.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, I can't remember, Ruth, I think one of the girls' name was, that was in there when we went in. Alice came in after,
mm-hmm.
and they just gradually filled up. You see, 43 was just the start of women going to work in the factories very much.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into the... I speak of Florence because she and I went into the jig shop together from the machine shop,
mm-hmm.
and we worked the whole time together.
Did all the women work together in one area?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The machine shop was one little corner of the building, and the fellows that built jigs had benches across tables
mm-hmm.
and benches across the way
mm-hmm.
and in another building.
Mm-hmm.
So
the first place you went into was the...
jig shop.
The jig shop.
Mm-hmm.
So are the jig and machine shop the same thing, or am I confused?
I went into the machine shop of the jig department.
Okay.
And there is a machine shop in the main factory that does machine work for the airplanes. We just built jigs,
okay.
jig and fixtures. It's called tooling today.
Mm-hmm. So, when you said the other women who went into the machine shop, one is the one in the production
line. Production line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the general machine shop. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, about how many people worked in the jig department?
There were 125 people total. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That included the foreman and the... no, it didn't either. We only included the workers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a clerk and a timekeeper and... foreman for each shift.
Mm-hmm. So, out of these 125 people, we mm-hmm. had only seven women,
mm-hmm.
and the rest were all
mm-hmm.
men.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of basically men's territory.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was about that percentage throughout the plant.
Mm-hmm.
In assembly, there might have been more women. I don't know. But, general rule, it was about that percentage.
Mm-hmm. Did that change as the war went on, or did it stay pretty much like that?
It increased a little bit it really went more after the war than before, because there was a lot of broken homes after the fellows came home, and a lot of widows that didn't have the allotment then, so they would go to work. And I don't know what the percentage is today.
But at that time,
it
was about, just maybe even less than about 10% of the people were.
Yeah.
Did, in the Jigae, about what was the physical setting like there that you were in? What did it look like?
It was a corrugated tin building. And, you go in, as you come in the door from the, well, we were in a, called an annex building, which did not join the main factory. It was set off in one corner. And as you would come in the door on the left, I was right inside the door, but running the milling machine. And on the right, there was a saw and a shaper and the drill presses and the lathe, all in a rectangle sort of shape. And you go straight ahead from the door, and up the stairs was the poop deck. And then immediately to your right would be like picnic tables, banquet tables. Four of them would be across, and there'd be an aisleway, and then, oh, I'd say there was 15 rows of benches. And the men would have their tool chests up that they would lock, keep their precision tools there, and whatever they would be working on would either be there or somewhere else in the plant, wherever it was needed. And then in the back of that was inspection and welding for whatever was needed in the department. It was self-sufficient.
Did you have to buy any tools?
Oh, yes.
Was there a place in the plant where you could buy them?
Or yes, they had a tool, I think Sharp had a tool placed there, and you could order tools. Oh, yes, I had to have probably $500-$600 worth of precision tools. At that time, was quite expensive.
Now, you paid for those out of your salary?
Oh, yes. Oh, no. They provided, now those were precision tools. The company did not provide those. But the company had a tool crib that you could take cutters and anything like that out. And, of course, they'd have the big vices and things like that that would fit the machines. They were all provided, only small micrometers and protractors and height gauges and depth gauges and things like that, which were extremely expensive because they were quite precision. And they, micrometers and, let's see, what else? Can't think of anything else. They don't, even today, they don't furnish those.
Now, with a milling machine, this is as far as what I'm aware of, which is still limited, has several parts on it, doesn't get a kind of a dangerous parts that you could even. Did they point all that out to you in the training, or were they marked
or anything? Oh, no. We were trained with that. And the significant difference between the lathe and a milling machine is you clamp a part in a lathe that you're going to work on, the part rotates, moves, and your cutter stands still. And a milling machine is a different setup. It has a flat table, you bolt parts down on that, and a head comes down, or mine was a vertical head, it would move. It would come down and the cutter would move and go by the part. The table would move. So, I missed a couple of duties of being a fellow hollered at me just in time. I was bent over and the part was right here on my table going by my head, and just as he hollered at me, I leaned back as the part went flying by where I was just previously been sitting. It was a welded framework that was needed to form part of the nose of the Black Widow that we were building at the time. And it had to be fragile because they had to get in it to rivet around, but they couldn't hold it to form it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not too good a way that it could be clamped down
mm-hmm.
to cut the area that needed to be cut. And sometimes judgments can be off, but where you think you've got it clamped tight, but when that cutter comes down and hits it with such speed, sometimes it'll throw apart clear across the building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they worried about. You know, if they maim a man, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole world would come down on them if they maimed a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So they were extra cautious with us. And our safety engineer was Mr. Safety First.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he just took that name or was born with it, we don't know. But he hounded the plants almost unmercifully and school
mm-hmm.
to see that we weren't maimed, which was not bad,
mm-hmm.
you know. They could have become lax if they're not, because some, well, I think they've only killed one man at Northrop and maimed very few. But some of them have been quite tragic.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you had more than, what was the other one that
I worked on? Well, I had a little cutter in the nose of the machine,
mm-hmm.
and it was about 2 inches in diameter, and it held a tool bit
mm-hmm.
That we sharpened in different types of cutting edges to cut whatever we wanted to cut. Well, it had a set screw in it, and it would come out like kind of like a little nose or a little finger out of the cutter,
mm-hmm.
The holder. And when it was turned on and going very fast, you can't see it sometimes. And I brushed a chip, and it went through the end of my finger and cut it. And I had to wear a stall for a while, but it didn't hurt my dignity more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost a fingernail on a rotating file, little files about 3 inches long on a belt that were about 3/4 of an inch wide, and the belt would go this way. Well, I was pushing into it. Well, I lost that whole fingernail,
mm-hmm.
which is quite painful because the coolant, they call it the greasy milk, that you put on parts to keep them cool while you're cutting them,
mm-hmm.
it got everything infected because it wasn't sterile in any way. But they had a hospital, and you got excellent care,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't work if you weren't able.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I started passing out 1 year, and Sissy and I were going to go down, well, I say passing out, I get lightheaded and go that way, which is very dangerous running machines. And she and I were going to go down and donate blood because they were begging, Red Cross was begging for blood. Well, they found out I had such low blood pressure, I shouldn't have even been living alone, let alone running a machine. So for 2 weeks, I had to sit and do filing and things like that and get on vitamins, and it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they really took care of us.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was going to ask you, with these other 7 women, did you get to be very close to those women?
Yes. We did an awful lot of things together. We'd go to dances. We'd go out to the Aragon Ballroom
mm-hmm.
and go to dances. And that, during the war, there was sufficient servicemen everywhere you went
mm-hmm.
To where you could dance and feel perfectly comfortable. And we'd go to the theater and to the opera and ballets and movies. There was all-night theaters in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And bowling. Yes, we became very, very good friends.
Mm-hmm. You had talked to me also about, well, that Northrop was like a family.
Mm-hmm.
So were there, and you talked about that we'd all get together and
mm-hmm.
bowl and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Was there ever any, I mean, this, you mentioning it in terms of like sexual harassment, mm-hmm. it sounds like if someone mm-hmm. else felt harassed,
mm-hmm.
they could complain. But outside of that, they just in terms of, we talked about this a little earlier about promiscuity during mm-hmm. the war. Did you see much of that going on at Norfolk?
No, I didn't. Not in the jig shop.
Mm-hmm.
I won't name names. There was one girl that was in there, and her attitude was that she would hold her job on her back.
Mm-hmm.
And she did for a short time, and then out the door she went.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't what she knew, it was who she knew.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the younger ones was, I think they were a little scorekeeping on her, but in general, it was, I would say, the person and not the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got into the main plan, it was a different story, mainly after the war,
mm-hmm.
was where the
mm-hmm.
As I told you, wives would come in to work, and that's when the family started breaking up.
Uh-huh. But during the war period, there didn't mm-hmm. seem to be as much going on around you, in that, at least in the area where you were?
No, I didn't. I only knew of one, well, those two that I spoke of were not married. I only knew of one that was married.
Mm-hmm.
And she went with married fellows, and it got a little messy, but that was about the only one in our division that
mm-hmm.
they generally were, as soon as it became evident, they were not welcome in the group because mainly we were all just, I'm not trying to make us out as a bunch of prudes. We'd all, a lot of us would get drunk, and a couple of times I didn't even remember how I got home
mm-hmm.
driving my own car.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the reasons I wanted a car, was I didn't have to make any payments, make any obligations, nothing. I'd come and go as I pleased, and I preferred being on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And no obligations to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And but the ones that were out of line were not invited to a second party.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were in people's homes, and in those days, promiscuity was not accepted. If you were married, you were married, and if you knew someone who was cheating on their wife or husband, you didn't want to be any part of it because you didn't want to be tainted along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's more broad-minded or live and let live today, I don't know, but that's the way we felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice feeling.
Mm-hmm. So, at the project meeting, think about it just in terms of how things were. Did it seem like the war was really a part of your everyday life?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Consciously?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Because very few days would go by that someone wouldn't have someone injured or killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we would all cry when someone would lose a son or a husband or he was injured or things. We felt it very, very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish the country was that patriotic today.
Mm-hmm.
Our politicians have deprived us of that, my own opinion.
Mm-hmm.